two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Time to chat with one of our favorites, Kurt Heelan from NBC Sports and ProBasketballTalk.com. Hey, Kurt, I don't know if you're dealing with any insomnia issues, but these NBA playoffs are a good cure for it right now because you got a lot of snoozers so far in these playoffs.
It's funny, I was joking with Dan from my site the other night that I'm like, I've run out of good blowout stories, man, like little storylines. Like, I need a close game to write about. It's been kind of last night was close for about three quarters, but it was pretty clear that Boston was still the better team, and frankly, they're probably just going to close it out in six. I don't see how that banged up a Miami team is going to be able to mount a challenge.
You could tell Charles Barkley's getting bored too because he's just attacking fans. He's not even commenting on the game anymore. Yeah. He's just attacking Golden State fans. I'll bet that broadcast crew's bored.
You're stuck with one series, and that series is, in their case, again, it was pretty clear pretty early on that the Warriors were the better team, and then they really took care of business in game three and ended this thing. And so you've got, you know, if it's not Charles Barkley on a horse, what's interesting at this point? There's not that much to say.
Yeah, that's a good point. Also, too, you look at, honestly, Boston and what they did last night, pulling away on the road. It really sets up for a Game 6 victory by the Celtics to close this thing out. And you look at where the Celtics were in the regular season and where they're at right now, where do you attribute the big turnaround?
They got a little bit healthy, but I think that they really offensively, sometimes it just takes a while for a new coach with Ime Udoka to really, for everything to sink in with them. And I think that that's what happened. It took longer for this team to get to where they wanted to be. They defended pretty well. But once they got healthy and inserted Robert Williams into the starting lineup consistently, their defense became the best in the league. And then they started getting enough offense and getting enough from Tatum and Brown and Marcus Smart and everybody else. And I think sometimes it just takes a little while to find an identity under a new coach. And I think it took a while for them, but once they settled into it, they've been fantastic. And by the way, I think they can really push the Warriors with that defense. Like, they have a defense that can challenge Golden State because of the length and switchability and athleticism of it. That will be a fascinating series.
I want to talk a little bit about Ime Udoka, the coach for the Boston Celtics, and kind of his growth and development. I know that he bounced around the league for quite a while and professional basketball for quite a while. and then was an assistant under some really good coaches, and I believe started under Popovich, if I'm not mistaken,
yeah.
If I remember from the press release. But talk a little bit about his development and maybe how popular he's becoming as we're watching this Boston Celtic team play more like a team than maybe any team that's in the NBA.
Yeah. Yeah, he did a really – look, he is out of the Popovich school. That's where he was entered, and I think it was Popovich who, during his journey – you know, look, he bounced around as an NBA player too, who saw the potential there, brought him in. But I think he did what a lot of really smart coaches will do. It's like it's one thing to learn at the right hand of Greg Popovich, but it's good to hear other voices, right, to see other systems. How do other people – do things. You see coaches who, you know, head coaches who are out for a year. Tom Thibodeau did this. I'm like, I'm going to go tour and watch everybody. And by the way, not just basketball guys. Like, I want to go watch, how does Pete Carroll run a Seahawks practice, right? Like, I want to see everything. I think he learned from all that, and you can see it now. He comes in with the weight of a former player, right? Like, I'm speaking from experience when he talks to them, but has seen enough and done enough that he really gets the coaching thing. And like I said, he was calling them out first part of the year, calling out their effort the first part of the year, which is multiple times, which not a lot of coaches do, or they really save that bullet for the right moment. He was able to do it and get them to rally around him still, which I think speaks to how he's rallied that locker room and how the presence he has.
Kurt Helin joining us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. And, you know, you look overall at this Celtics team and, you know, a potential matchup against Golden State. I got to imagine the NBA is pretty fired up about that potential matchup.
Yeah. There are some suits with ABC that are pretty happy with. If you look at the top 10 most viewed games, including playoffs so far, like I think the Warriors are in 7 of them. Like, the Warriors with Steph Curry are just, like, the NBA, when you get to this point in the year when you're trying to bring in the more casual fans, the fans who are sports fans but don't necessarily watch basketball all year round, Steph Curry's still a draw, man. The Warriors and the way they play is still a real draw. And so I think having that plus the mega market and the passionate fan base that is Boston really, there's going to be some good numbers there.
Scotty and I were talking about some of the reasons for these blowouts and definitely going to the three-point line and putting your fate on a three-point shot. It probably weighs pretty heavy. And one of my takeaways and the reason I think Golden State probably walks away with this championship is I think Golden State has more of a unique ability to stop the bleeding by getting to the rim than anybody left in the NBA. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I think that the ability – I think what's become clear – through this postseason, and frankly over the last couple of years, I've really crystallized this postseason, is the value of playing inside out, right? That even if you're going to shoot 43s a game, if you're not getting into the paint and getting some layups and breaking the defense down to draw them in and then kicking it out to open shooters, then it doesn't work. You know, did Miami take 45 last night, but they weren't getting into the paint. So these were all kind of contested, difficult shots. That skill is an incredible value, even if you're Luka Doncic and you're getting into the paint and kicking out and nobody's hitting your shots. Like, the value of that, and the Warriors are very good at that. Steph Curry obviously puts the ball on the floor. They are so good, but they do it a lot with – it's not just isolation, right? It's the ball movement and the constant player movement. Their weak-sided actions are not decoy. Like, they're literally trying to get Jordan Poole free and getting guys to cut baseline, and all that motion just breaks down defenses. And it's just very effective for them. And it takes the right players, but it also takes some time to build up what they've got right now.
So when you look at Dallas and you look at obviously a tremendous run, but it really felt like, even though I know they won game 4, it really felt like after game 3 with Luka talking about, hey, guys, I'm only 23, and their coach talking about, like, hey, we went further than anybody else. It almost felt like Dallas was kind of waving the white flag. You anticipate this thing's over coming up tonight?
I'm sticking with my Mavericks in 6 pick. I don't think that could possibly go wrong, guys.
No, I think that's – yeah.
No, actually, I do. I'm with you. I think this ends tonight. I think that there was a – the Warriors have a history of not closing out their first games, but I think they realized tonight, too. Look, first off, they're capable of playing at a higher level than Dallas right now. But also, if they win tonight, they don't play again for a week, which is huge for the old bodies of Steph Curry and Draymond Green and everybody who's a little banged up there. And they don't get on a plane for a week and a half until they have to fly to Boston, probably. But, you know, that kind of time off, I think they understand the value of it, and I think that they are going to be a very focused team looking to close out tonight. And when they're playing at that level, I'm not sure anybody in the NBA left is going to beat them.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Kurt, last week we talked to you about the Utah Jazz trading into or finding their way into the NBA draft and the talent that's associated with this draft. Is this a draft that's going to be worth moving into? Do you think that there is some – I don't know if there's some incredible talent. Do you think that there's going to be multiple usable talents in this draft?
Actually, it's funny. I had that conversation with somebody who said that they think this draft is deeper with potential quality rotation players than we've seen in a while. And right now it's always a lot of development. Like if you're drafting after 10, you're thinking, hey, in a couple of years we can make this guy a steady part of the rotation. And if you get, you know, sure you get lucky occasionally and you get Giannis or Kawhi or whatever, but more likely you're like, hey, or Donovan Mitchell for that matter. But most of the time you're like, hey, if I can get a solid rotation player at 12, I'm happy. Those solid rotation players go deep into the 20s now in this draft or potentially. So I think that there is real value in getting in and getting those guys. And I think there's always some value in the second round. If there's somebody you really like and think you can, again, Utah's been such a great development program. It's somebody who, if they're in the second round, they're there for a reason, but it's sometimes a matter of development and getting them to play to their strengths or shoring something up. And if there's somebody you really like, there's value in getting in and bringing that guy into the system.
Kurt Helin joining us, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. You know, it's kicking up every now and then. You see a story about it, and then it kind of disappears for a while. But how soon before we have a midseason tournament in the NBA?
Yeah, because I think we're all gripping and waiting for that. I think it'll probably happen in some form within the next 5 years, maybe the next 3 years, because Adam Silver really wants it.
Yeah, he's really seen dead set on this.
He is very into this. And because of the success of the plan, I think he's going to have enough buy-in from owners willing to try it. I'm not sure what it looks like or exactly how you pull this off. And they're talking now about – they're not even calling it a mid-season tournament. They want to do it in December, like before Christmas, basically. I don't know. To me, I'm not sure how that's going to work because that type of – it's baked into soccer. It's baked into soccer fandom, right? Like in Europe, the FA Cup and the Champions League and all the other cups, and I mean there's like 40 of them, I think, in England. I don't know. There's so many cups. But that's kind of baked into fandom, right? That's baked into, hey, we can also win this, and we could win, you know, three trophies this year or whatever. It's just not part of our psyche here in the United States. I just don't care. We've talked about this, guys. I don't think fans here care. I'm like, are the Lakers or Celtics going to put up a midseason tournament banner? I'm not sure that anybody cares that much. I mean, yeah, the players will care if you put enough money on it, but even then, you make it $1 million a player, that'll motivate half the roster. But how much does that motivate Donovan Mitchell or Rudy Gobert, who are making a lot of money and are focused on championships and legacy? I'm just not sure what the buy-in is.
So, Kurt, this year we saw all three of your top MVP, NBA MVP candidates, foreign born, all of them pretty young, two of them specifically. Is this something we just need to get used to, that foreign born and foreign raised coached players are coming into the NBA and doing more and more good and showing off their ability?
Yeah, I think so. I think as the game has become more global and you're getting peak athletes from other countries, there's just not Giannis Antetokounmpo's, I mean, physically everywhere. Yeah, he's driven, he's put in the work to make his game what it is, but he's also just an athletic freak of nature. It's interesting, by the way, guys, all five first team all NBA players were 27 or under. People in or just entering their prime, and the Ja Morants of the world will change it. I think there's a crop of Americans coming up with Tatum, with Ja Morant, where you're, and others, where I think you're going to see some Americans get into that mix. But now that you're drawing the best players from around the world and it's truly a global game, I think that you are going to just kind of have to get used to this, in the sense that if you're bringing in the best players from everywhere, there's really great athletes all over the globe. And if they dedicate themselves to basketball, you know, you're going to end up with some elite guys. It's just Luka has a gift, and I don't, you know, it doesn't really matter what league he's playing in, it's going to be impressive.
And certainly the future of the NBA looks really good with some of these young stars, for sure, and what they've developed. And you know, obviously Ja Morant's got to have a big smile on his face because he made all NBA, which means that his lucrative future got a little bit more impressive. But I think we talked about this. I'm sorry, what's
not
that?
Not yet. He's got to make it. Not yet. Because he's so young, he's actually got to make it again next year.
Oh, that's right.
Really?
Because he's on his...
He's so early. He has not gotten the extension, which wouldn't kick into his fifth year. So he's actually got to make one more. I think it's one over the next two. One more All-NBA team, which I imagine.
I think it's
going to
be pretty safe.
Healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So
the big winner was Trae Young, though. He got in this year.
Yeah. And I thought it was funny how Jason Tatum says, "Well, you know, a day late, dollar short." You know, because obviously, it cost him a little bit of money not getting it last year. You know, the thing is, and I think we've talked about this before. You know, if I'm, and I don't know who has the vote here locally in Utah, but if it's Tony Jones or Andy Larson or you know one of the beat writers, I don't want to vote on this thing. And I guess the question is, do they still make it public? I should probably know this. I assume so. And I don't know if I'm a beat writer or if I'm a guy that's around this team on a daily basis, I wouldn't want to vote on this thing.
I think Andy has specifically said that, if not privately to me, publicly, that he was concerned about that. I don't know if Tony or I don't know who. The vote is public. I don't know who did and didn't have one, outside of the people who announced it this year. But yeah, and you still get. I've still players occasionally. It tends to be more agents. Like, how could you put X in front of Z? You know,
yeah.
What about my guy? Type of stuff. Teams will do a little send. You know, a little promotion. A lot of teams, from phone calls to, hey, your Scotty Barnes for Rookie of the Year T-shirt or whatever. But if I were a beat writer, I'm with you. Like, it's one thing for me as a national writer. I have a vote. I certainly am around, and players can contact me. But if you're a beat guy who's around Team X every day, kind of changes the dynamic. And it also leaves you with a slightly skewed view. I mean, you see the Utah, if Tony Jones sees the Utah, and he's a huge basketball fan and watches a lot of basketball, you see the Utah Jazz every day, but you see the Celtics twice in person. And you can, small sample size, right? You can be like, man, Jason Tatum is all of that. Well, Jason Tatum is, but if you see two really good defensive games from Marcus Smart, does that skew you as opposed to seeing them, you know, hey, Giannis didn't have a great defensive day when I saw him. Does that skew you, even though you can argue Giannis is the better defender? Like, it can't be easy. Plus, yeah, you'd have to hear from a lot of guys.
I wanted to, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you, what do you see in the future for Jordan Poole? What does Golden State do with him?
It's a really good question. I think they've kind of got to pay, and they are they're a cash rich, and I don't mean just like the owner's a billionaire, but I mean like with the Chase Center, they're now the highest revenue team in the league. I believe they bring in, with the new arena, more revenue and the new TV deal, more revenue than anybody else. I think that they are going to have to pay him, because you look at that team and you see Poole and Kuminga and, you know, whatever Jonathan Wiseman becomes, maybe, and Kevon Looney until then. Like, you see a bridge to what's next. You see, I don't know if the next is going to be what they've had the last 8 years, but you can see a bridge to a future that's not a complete tear down and rebuild with the guys they've got. But you're going to have to pay to keep those guys. And I think not that Jordan Poole's a max guy, but I think there's a lot of teams that would like to poach him. And I think the Warriors are going to have to pay to keep him, because he's just part of what they are now.
What's your comparable for Jordan Poole? Do you have one?
Ooh. Now, off the top of my head, that's a little rough. My guess is he's going to make, is he up for his extension this year? 4 years, 80. 4 years, 80 was just what Fred VanVleet got. What we're talking about for Jalen Brunson, does that seem like that seems off the top of my head like a reasonable number for Jordan Poole? In that impact and in that ballpark, and if he's willing to take something in that range, I think you've got to do it if you're the Warriors, man. He's become, the Poole party lineups are really, really dangerous, and they're going to need that going forward.
Well, Kurt, we appreciate your time as always. Thanks for joining us, and look forward to catching up with you next week. Hopefully we have some decent games to talk about.
That would be fun to talk about close games and stuff. I remember those.
I know, right? the good old days.
Good old days.
There you go. Kurt Helin right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.